first to the party and last to leave. What do you say we party together? This is Sportsnet Today. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Super Sunday, and you know what that means. It is time for The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara alongside Shaw Ali. Super Bowl, baby! It's time. Bengals, Rams, we got you covered for the next 2 hours. Danger zone coming up. Wide receiver look back. Fantasy football prop plays for the Super Bowl. Jeff Ulrich from DraftKings is going to join us. It's a big show today. A super show, if you will. Show, how are you?
I'm doing well, Andy, and I like that you teed up the last danger zone of the year. I think you'll like my danger zone. I kind of decide on where I want to go. I usually have a couple coming into the show today, but I think I know where I want to go. So I'm excited for us to get to the end, only so I can show you my danger zone pick.
Oh, boy. Is this going to be like Odell Beckham Jr., 800 yards, and Andy cries? They have to happen together.
It might be, honestly. It might. You never know.
Over under tears. It's under show. I held them in. Take that.
I can't wait, man.
I can't believe it. And I know we say that probably every year, like, wow, it's over. We had the extra week. It was another COVID year. And by God, the NFL did it again, Show. No matter what, just some way, they're like, you are playing every freaking game and you're gonna like it. And that's what happened. And we're here again in LA for what I'm hoping is a shootout type match, Show. Like, I know people get nervous and teams kind of sometimes clamp down in these tight moments and all that, but boy, this has all the makings of something that could be as fun as a Chiefs-Bengals game that it was a couple weeks ago, where they just sling it.
Well, you and I did the kind of panel picks, right? We were two of, I think it was six people who did panel picks for Sportsnet.ca's like annual article, you know, saying, yeah, here's heads or tails, or what's the spread going to be? Who's going to win? Who's going to be the Super Bowl MVP? And, you know, you give a couple of reasons kind of confirming your bias, essentially, right? It was cool to be a part of that this year. And I think you and I were on very opposite sides of that of that argument, right? Like, you picked the Bengals. And I think you picked Joe Burrow to be the MVP. Is that right?
Let me see. Did you give a deep dive analysis on heads or tails, Show? Did you give a...
Did I? No, I did not.
It's heads because... Okay, I just have the article up here. Sportsnet.ca, okay. Folks, you can check it out. I had... Bengals were at the time, 4.5-point favorites. I picked, yes, the Bengals and my MVP, Joe Burrow.
Okay. See, I took the Rams, and I took the Rams, I think, when they were still, again, I'm not sure if it's changed, but when they were
now.
Still, okay, so they were -4.5 when we did that article, so I picked the Rams at 4.5, and I went with Matthew Stafford, so we're very opposite sides, both going with quarterbacks, obviously, because, you know, I mean, let's be real, quarterbacks are the safest picks for Super Bowl MVPs, but boy, I mean, it's crazy to think, I was thinking about this the other day. It's crazy to think when you look back on the 2021 NFL season that, you know, in the storylines going into this year, right, were things that, like, remember the big Bengals storyline going into this year? Certainly it was like, oh, how will Joe Burrow's surgically repaired knee look? That was obviously the biggest one. But the second biggest one that you and I talked about on this show, and hey, look, fool you once, fool me twice, right? But was Ja'Marr Chase and like the preseason drops. Remember that? And it was like, oh, the interesting storyline was Ja'Marr Chase attributes the fact to preseason drops to bigger balls in the NFL versus the college game. And then it's like people like didn't draft him very highly. And I think what was his ADP in the preseason? It was like, what, like the fifth or sixth round? And I'm like 98% sure he was like a top 3, top 4 receiver this year, right? So, I mean, I guess the lesson learned, right? Don't overstate drops in the preseason, I guess.
Like, in fairness to everybody, though, Show, he was like, oh, there's a line on the football in the NFL, and it's throwing me off. It's like, excuse me? What? It's like, That's throwing you off. That did cause for pause. Now, nothing is. Maybe the lesson is to not doubt people who can learn or overcome something like a line being different on a football. Right. Regardless, the man put up, I believe it was 700 plus yard games. Two of those went for over 200 yards, except for the one that the Browns shut him down. Shut him down, show. Chop.
Great.
But outside of that, he was phenomenal.
Yes, he was. Yes. By a lot, too.
Oh, man. I'm looking here. He was, in PPR, the fifth best wide receiver. Believe it or not, and Justin Jefferson, we know what heck of a talent, but because Minnesota was kind of a bland story this year, Justin Jefferson was ahead of him.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I know we're going to do the wide receivers and then look back on the top 10 or top 12, 15, however, wherever you want to stop, receivers of the past season. But Justin Jefferson was number four, and Ja'Marr Chase was in half PPR. Jefferson was number four, Chase was number five. And guys like Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, Mike Evans, DK Metcalf, I mean, he wasn't even in the top 12, but Hill and Diggs were 6 and 7 respectively. So it's pretty crazy to think that even in Chase's first year, he was a top 5 wide receiver. And in Justin Jefferson's second year, he repeated having that monstrous season and was number 4. I mean, number 1 as Cooper Kupp is not going to shock anyone because of the way the season went down. But I mean, if you had told me that Cooper Kupp would be the number 1 wide receiver by like 60 plus points, like in terms of the difference between him and second place, who ended up being Deebo Samuel. If you told me that was the difference and he was number one back in, like, I don't know, the end of August, I would have probably laughed, honestly.
Well, it wouldn't have made sense at the time, right, Joe? Because all we knew about Cooper Kupp in the NFL, and all you can do is go by past production, and that was he was a slot receiver for Jared Goff, and he was a damn good slot receiver.
Yeah.
But that was his role. And the thinking was, all right, well, Robert Woods is a more of a field stretcher, and that's what Matthew Stafford likes to do. Ergo, Robert Woods is the pick. Well, Robert Woods got injured, didn't quite get used as much as people hoped for, and Cooper Kupp was way more than that and has now turned into and showcased himself as an absolute complete wide receiver. That's something people could not have predicted, and it happened, and wherever... Hey, if you got Cooper Kupp, you were lucky enough to get Cooper Kupp, I'm sure you were in at the very least every game of your fantasy football season. Because, show this guy, we'll get to DraftKings. We're going to have our DraftKings Super Bowl listener contest today, folks. But Cooper Kupp, show averaged 28.2 fantasy points a game. Averaged.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's disgusting. Like, stop it.
Are you putting him in your DraftKings lineup today?
Yes, I will, even though everybody else also will, but the guy's going to get a lot of points, you know? So the question becomes, and we'll get more into this with Jeff Ulrich from DraftKings, who's going to join us at the top of the hour. Where do you put Cooper Kupp in your captain slot, which, for those who haven't played the DraftKings captain slot, or captain game, is 1.5 times the fantasy points, but also 1.5 times the salary. So you have your $50,000 salary cap. So Cooper Kupp goes for $17,400 as your captain. Now, the guy gets you 30 fantasy points. Okay. But there's always that balance we talk about, Joe. If everybody picks Cooper Kupp, and so do you, it doesn't really do you any benefit for Cooper Kupp to have a great game because it balances out. But at the same point, if you don't take him and you get too cute, you're just not going to have the point volume to be able to compete for a prize.
I'll tell you what, man, I'm not going to put him in one of my lineups today. I mean, at least in the one that we're going to put out with the listeners, this might spectacularly backfire on me. I freely admit, I've put him in basically, I think, every single week's listener league DraftKings lineup between the end of the beginning of the playoffs and now. And I think I've been in the top three basically every week. I think if I don't put him in, it very well might, you know, like I said, completely backfire on me. But you know what? I'm going to take the chance. No Cooper Kupp in my DraftKings lineup today. I'll say that.
Oh, but that's a danger zone take right there. To not include somebody. To not include somebody. That might be the first non-inclusion danger zone pick. That's how good of a season that Cooper Kupp has had and what he's done. And that's, you know, the line's now at 4. It's going to be a really fun day. Some news just in general coming out from around the NFL as we get people ready. And if you're looking to put in for your fantasy lineup, at the tight end spot, this is a dog for a fantasy tight end spot, show. This sucks. As great as the wide receivers are, tight end is bad. Tyler Higbee, not expected to play at all. Not that he was going to get you that many points anyway, but now you look at the Kendall Blanton situation as maybe, and he, you know, when I say flashed, I use the term like quite loosely, but he caught footballs when Tyler Higbee was not in. That's the best I can say about Blanton filling in. He caught footballs. Yeah. And he had a touchdown 2 weeks ago against Tampa Bay. He did have a touchdown.
Great.
So that's not bad, I guess. Against San Francisco, 5 catches, 5 targets, got you 10.7 fantasy points. So, like, it at least appears that he's being used in the same way that Tyler Higbee was as far as targets going his way. Now, we know Tyler Higbee's on the field all the time, but there's so many weapons around him that he doesn't get a chance. The Cincinnati side looks very, very strongly that C.J. Uzomah will play today. And again, he's had a weird year where he could catch you 2 touchdowns on 2 catches. He could. Or he could catch you 0 plays. None. Nothing. And give you next to nothing and no production. There's not going to be yards. He's super touchdown dependent. But it looks like he is going to play, and he has promised if Cincinnati wins the Super Bowl, he will take a bath in the Skyline chili that Cincinnati is famous for, which honestly looks like diarrhea in a bowl. It looks... I don't know if you've seen it, Show. The worst-looking thing ever. It's the worst-looking thing. Have you seen it?
What is it? Skyline chili?
They are so there's in Cincinnati, now I've never been to Cincinnati, but Skyline Chili, they have like a, you know, their version, obviously not as tall as the CN Tower, but like a building that is higher than other buildings that you can go and look out on Cincinnati and the better looking Kentucky across the Ohio River. And then they serve Skyline Chili, which apparently is very, very famous and Cincinnatians are very proud of. But from a lot of people who I know who have gone there, they're like, Andy, this looks like, you look at this, you're like, what is this? It's just a pile of stuff in a bowl. It's called chili, and it is just, apparently you do not want to be too far away from a restroom after you have it.
So I'm looking at a picture of it, and it seems to be spaghetti, right? Like spaghetti noodles covered in chili, so ground beef and all the rest of the whatever makes up chili, and then just a heaping pile of what looks like cheddar cheese, like shredded cheddar cheese, I think. Cincinnati chili. You know what? I'm not going to lie to you, Andy. This looks kind of tasty. I'd eat this. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of hungry now. I kind of want some of this Cincinnati chili.
Oh, boy. Well, Show, you know what? If you're going to make it at home, folks, and you're going to make it as, you know, per the recipe, keep the guest bathroom open for any guests, okay? That's all I'm saying. But
you know, Andy, I gotta ask you, like, you reminded me, I was hosting with George a couple of nights ago, and obviously George will be on Inside the Lines. I'm sure he'll talk about it with Bastille and Rapp, but he does every year this thing where, like, he has a Super Bowl party, and at the party, the foods they make are the foods that are from the two host cities, right?
Yes.
So he had mentioned to me a couple, like last week or something, that Cincinnati chili was one of the few, like, I guess it is like one of the most like better known like regional foods, I guess he was saying, from like the Cincinnati area. And then you look at like L.A. Apparently cheeseburgers come from L.A. Apparently hot fudge sundaes come from L.A. Remember he was telling me. So hey, look, Los Angeles, a very worldly city. I'm not surprised that a lot of famous foods come from there as well. There are a bunch of other ones too. But I'm just curious, like, what is the famous food? Like, what is a famous food? I guess from Cleveland. Do you know? I'm genuinely curious.
Well, now I'll have to say the famous food for me is Carl's Inn on the Barristers on West 3rd. That Reuben sandwich, Show. It should be Reuben. Montreal's sandwich, known for the Reuben.
Right.
Forget it. I'm sorry, Montreal people, listener, people who love, what is it, Schwartz's, their show? Is that the one? I think it's Schwartz or something. I've eaten there, and it's a fine sandwich. It is. But the one in Cleveland is way better at Carl's, and it puts it to shame. You're like, you're nuts. Nope. You try Carl's Reuben, Show. And it's the best going. Now, what it's known, I think it's deli sandwiches. I'm just looking here. Yeah, I just
corned
Googled it.
Beef sandwiches and like the other things called like the Polish boy. It's like a kielbasa with French fries on it. I don't know. I will say it. Now, maybe this is a bad idea. Maybe I shouldn't have looked up food like right early in the morning. But pierogies apparently are big Cleveland food. So there you go.
I'm looking at pierogies. Yeah, they have some like Polish and Eastern European like communities in there or whatever. So you get the pierogies, and I knew, yeah, it was the deli, the corned beef, right? It was the right, deli stuff. So, but that's it. Much better than I'm sure the Cincinnati chili, the LA one, obviously. Cheeseburger, well, yeah, hot fudge sundae. Come on now.
Cheeseburgers, Andy. How can cheeseburgers are undefeated? Oh my gosh, I had a burger last night, and all I could think of was, I should have saved this for the Super Bowl in honor of Los Angeles, whom I think will win. But you know, maybe I should. Maybe that's jinxing it. I don't know.
That's a cool little thing to be able to do, the different food and stuff like that. Like when it was years ago, like New Orleans and things like that. It's like, you know, you hope for places that have like some interesting food. Otherwise, it's a pile of brown mush on noodles for Cincinnati. But, you know, Cincinnati's close to Kentucky one day. I do want to go there and do the Bourbon Trail, cross the border and have some fun over there. But we'll have to see. Some news show. Your guy Tom Brady, not done yet. Maybe we might have to reel back. Might have to reel back the tribute one more time. Ian Rapoport, 2 hours ago, said despite Tom Brady's retirement announcement, the Bucs are not giving up hope that he'll return and play in 2022. And Brady has not shut the door completely, either publicly or privately. How about that?
Okay. All right. Well, hey, you know what? I guess we never really knew, right, in the social media era, what kind of retired athlete Tom Brady would be like. And maybe he turns out to be Brett Favre. Who knows, right? Maybe he returns to play, and he's like, I don't want to play for the Bucks though. And he goes to play for the Saints or something. And then the following year, he retires. And then he goes to play for, I don't know, like the Panthers. Or maybe by the end of it all, like all of the much heralded, like, hey, Tom Brady's retiring. Maybe by then, he'll have played for like 8 different teams.
What if, to your point with the Saints, opening in division. Now, he really likes the Bucks, so I doubt he would try to, you know, hose them. But, like, no team, only what? A couple players have won as quarterbacks. I think it's Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Super Bowls with 2 different teams. Would Tom Brady want to be the first to do it with 3 different teams? That wouldn't surprise me.
Would you take, like, no, I'm seriously asking, would you take a 45-year-old Tom Brady as the Browns quarterback for just 1 season?
I would show. The guy led the league in passing touchdowns and passing yards. I'm going to say no.
Yeah, okay.
Right? No, that could be. The thing is, at that age, of course, any year, any time in the year, any play could be the downturn. Like, any single play could be it. But the guy is leaving at the height of heights. And that's why I just didn't fully buy or think he would retire, show, because it's, like I've said before, the all-time greats, for the most part, outside of a very few number of exceptions, have to have proven to themselves that they're done. And I'm sorry, but Tom Brady being literally the best statistic quarterback in the NFL this year is not that. Like, it makes too much sense for him to come back, whether it's with the Bucks. You still have the pieces around. I'm sure Gronk is waiting. If Brady came back, I'm sure Gronk will come back one more time. You got the pieces. You got everything there. The question then becomes, if he does stay retired, is it an Aaron Rodgers that goes to Tampa Bay? And another report also from Rappaport Show is that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers relationship is, in quote, as good a spot as it has been in a long time. So...
Great. Hey, good for him. If he stays in Green Bay for one more year, hey, you know what? Good for Aaron. Four MVPs, Andy. I think he's now only behind Peyton Manning for the most MVP to be tied for the most MVPs, I think, in like the history of the NFL, which is pretty crazy, right?
But then again, so he's got the Super Bowl, which obviously you never discount, right? You got a Super Bowl that's significant. But to have only one, to like all those MVPs to only have and just have it where it's never gone right after that for whatever reason. And that's why we said in the playoffs when they lost to the 49ers, I said, listen, I think the 49ers very well could win this game because just something weird happens with Green Bay. You can't put your finger on to what, but something goes wrong. And it did. And the MVP got you 10 points. So he can go back, he'll put up a bunch of stats, and that'll be it.
You know, I'll say this, Andy, on Aaron Rodgers and winning the one Super Bowl. Yeah, like, I know we like to kind of clown, and I'm 1,000,000% a part of this, so, you know, I'm not excusing myself here, but I think it's kind of funny that in terms of, you know, what, like 30 years or whatever it ended up being of 30-plus of MVP play from Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. I know there was a couple of blips here and there when the guys were injured, but like by and large, it was Favre and Rodgers for a really, really, really long time, right? The funny thing is, like, I feel like, you know, we're talking about Brady earlier. I feel like the Patriots and Brady specifically, even because he went to the Bucs and won in his very first season away from New England, I feel like Brady, and again, this is not a hot take by any means, but he skewed, I think, the perception of like what it means to win championships in the NFL. Because like winning even one Super Bowl, when did Rodgers win in 2010? So he won it like 12 seasons ago, right? Wow. So it's still, he was like a relatively speaking young man, right? But it's just funny to think that even with one Super Bowl title, you know, that's great, I think, for the modern NFL. Patrick Mahomes, you would have thought after this early career success he had, and then they beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl, you know, they went to four straight AFC championship games, and they only have one Super Bowl to show for it, right? I just, like, all things considered, that's not too bad. It's just, I think the Patriots and Brady specifically have essentially skewed the international perception on what it means to be successful as a quarterback in the NFL.
Well, Drew Brees as well, just one Super Bowl for his whole career. Yeah. And they were great all the time. I think that's a great point, Joe. It is super hard to win a Super Bowl. And if you take away the Brady consistency and however you want to paint that formula that worked for so long in New England and then again in Tampa Bay, if you take that out, there's not a lot of repeats, right? There's not a lot of multiple run Super Bowls. Like Eli Manning has more Super Bowls or Super Bowl rings than Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, there's that difficulty to be able to do it. And you can be good for a long time, but to get back to the Super Bowl is so hard. So that just puts an extra layer on the greatness that Brady is. And according to that report show, might not be done. Like, would it surprise anybody? You know, Brady takes a few months off. Maybe Giselle after a while is like, Tom, pick up your slippers. God, all right, get out of here. Go play another year. Jeez, get out of the house.
Did you see that report that, like, if Brady does stay retired, Gronk would be 33 if he decided to play in 2022. So obviously, like, at 33 with the injuries he's had, would it be a shock if he decided to fully, completely, permanently retire? Probably not. But at the same time, if he decided to play again, I forget what he had said, but he basically had, there were some comments, like, I think it was like in the last week or so, maybe it was right before the Pro Bowl, that he basically said if there was a quarterback not named Tom Brady, that he would love to play with Joe Burrow. And it just kind of made me laugh because all I could think of was, yeah, first of all, the one thing the Bengals, the only thing they really do need is a dynamic tight end offensive weapon. So certainly, even at 33, I bet that Gronk would be used enough by someone like Zach Taylor and targeted enough by Joe Burrow to make him a little more fantasy relevant than, like, let's say CJ Uzoma was this year in flashes, right? But it's just funny because Gronk is a smart man, right? He set himself up for his post Brady career, knowing that, you know, he's probably not going to play with Brady forever, as much as he has said that. But boy, can you imagine what Burrow to Gronk would look like instead of Burrow to Uzoma?
Boy, and you know what? Actually, for fantasy purposes, it's probably a situation show that, especially if you're Jamar Chase and a T. Higgins, you don't want those that share going away from those two guys. But you're right. Just to see how that would play out, I would be shocked if Gronk plays with anybody other than Tom Brady. Before he came out of retirement, he was in the WWE. Remember, he was the, 24/7 champ, and then that funny segment where he announced, I'm coming out of retirement, and then someone comes out of the bushes and pins him in his front yard or whatever. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I could say, Gronk has the personality to be able to do whatever he wants outside of football. So I just think if he's not there, or if Brady's not there, wraps it up and goes back, right? He's played 2 more years out of it. So I don't know. It's one thing we do know is he's not playing today. The tight end positions for today, not great. Something show there's some prop plays like anytime CJ Uzoma touchdown. And it was just like the over-under was set at 0.5, so he has to get a touchdown or not. Is that a bet you would take? Like, I was thinking on that one. I'm like, it's completely possible, but I don't know.
I was thinking about that. I don't know. I think anytime touchdowns, sure. In a single game, Super Bowl or not, is that possible? Yeah, but I think I would rather take my chances with a Tyler Boyd or even like a Perine, let's say, to catch a touchdown or something like that. You know what I mean? Just because CJ Uzoma, I don't think he's practiced a whole ton this week. And I know people like to say, that's going to be where you get these guys. But I don't know. I think I'd probably pass on any major tight end prop plays today. Especially in DraftKings. I don't know if you've seen their prices, but Blanton is, I think, 6,900 and Uzoma is 6,600. That seems like captain showdown format that DraftKings is going with today, even for that, that seems a little pricey for me when you can get is it crazy for me to say that I'd rather take Evan McPherson at 6,000 over someone like Blanton or Uzoma? I don't know. I think I might.
Not at all. One quick point here, Sean, we'll revisit this later in the show before we break.
Okay.
But when you're looking at other targets other than the big names, most teams, it's like, okay, they throw a little bit here and there. Both the Rams and Bengals don't use many, if any, of their secondary pass catchers out of the big names. So through each of the last 3 games, only 3 Bengals wide receivers have been targeted by Burrow. And they are who we know, Chase, Higgins, and Boyd. So there's not none of that cute, that fourth string guy got a deep ball. None. Those are the only receivers, only wide receivers targeted on by Joe Burrow on at least 91% of his dropbacks. And on the Rams, only 4 players, Kupp, Beckham, and Jefferson. Only one other, Ben Skowronek, who caught 1 pass. So if you take him out. So what I'm saying is, if you're looking at value, sleeper, stuff like that, through these playoffs, through these last 3 games, it has been proven, and for the playoffs, if you're going through the whole way, only the usual suspects are producing. So it might not be a good idea to try to get too cute with any picks outside of those wide receivers.
So you're saying don't put Trent Taylor for $1,500 into my Bengals lineup today?
It would be a spicy pick show is what I'm saying. It'd be as spicy as that Cincinnati Skyline chili.
Do you remember last year, real quick, do you remember last year when we did the Danger Zone? You picked someone who, it was a true Danger Zone. It was a guy like most people had never heard of. And then I think he was ruled inactive 30 minutes before game time. And he just didn't play. I don't know if you remember that. So, don't pick Trent Taylor, Andy, for your Danger Zone pick today.
No Trent Taylor. Yeah, maybe they go with somebody who gets deactivated. Yeah, I forget who it was. But he had caught a touchdown the week before or something, and then it's inactive. I'm like, well, there you have it. just slams the computer shut. There you go. That's all. We're going to get to lots of Super Bowl talk, fantasy prop plays with Jeff Ulrich of DraftKings at the top of the hour. But up next, our position review and look ahead, our way too early rankings for the wide receiver group. How did that look? What did we think? What were the expectations before the season? What happened? And what should we expect moving forward? We'll talk wide receiver when the fantasy show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We're back and rolling on a Super Sunday edition of the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Super Bowl goes tonight. Andy McNamara alongside Shaw Ali. Get us on Twitter at AndyMC81 at SNS Ali, at the Fantasy Show, top of the hour. We'll chat with Jeff Ulrich from DraftKings. Get some fantasy player prop plays, best plays in your lineup. We will have our listener league to send out. Now, we'll send it out on Twitter, folks, but also, if you don't have Twitter or you want it sent, the link sent right to you, we provide that service, show on the People's Text Line. That's how we appreciate our listeners. So text in 590-590, name and location. Just be like, hey, guys, can I have the DraftKings Fantasy Show Listener League contest? And show will fire that right off to you because I don't have access to the text. So I don't know what's who texts in or not. I rely solely on show.
It's true.
I could be getting compliments every week, show, every week, and you could just not tell me. I would have no idea.
You don't get compliments every week. That just
that's right, because people send it right
to me. I get compliments. I get many compliments. I get a lot, just so many. It's overwhelming sometimes.
At not show. I'll say the amount of like DMs and like virtual high fives to me destroying Johnny Manziel on Twitter show just keep coming. They keep I'm like, listen, Johnny's gone. I'm over it. I've moved on. You know,
I'm excited for him to become a new an ambassador for the Cleveland Browns in the not too distant future.
I don't think that guy's just after burying Cleveland. It's like, yeah, dude, have fun, Johnny. Good Lord, what a disaster he's become. Like I said, we'll chat with Jeff Ulrich. We'll get to our Danger Zone pick, Super Bowl prop plays, DFS lineup set. But show we've been going through our position in review, preseason expectations, what happened, and a look ahead. Today is the wide receiver group, and it was obviously an interesting year for that particular position. My top 12 that I had from Sportsnet.ca preseason article, I had Stephon Diggs number one. I'll just run through them real quick. Stephon Diggs number one, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams three, Justin Jefferson four, DeAndre Hopkins five, A.J. Brown, DK Metcalf, Calvin Ridley, CeeDee Lamb, Terry McLaurin, Mike Evans, and Keenan Allen as the top 12. I'm assuming a lot of those guys were in your top 12 as well.
Yeah, our top 12 were like they were just essentially just in slightly different orders, right? I think I had Allen Robinson in the top 12, which what a swing and a miss on that one, right? Hey, my God, that was completely wrong. He was my 10th guy, but the other guys were Adams number one, Hill number two, Diggs number three, Hopkins number four. Boy, Hopkins, what a terrible year for Hopkins. Like, injuries aside, wasn't like that good. And then he got injured to end the year, and then we never saw him play again, right? So number four for Hopkins did not pan out. Calvin Ridley at number five. My goodness, like Calvin Ridley again. Not like I am very pleased that, you know, mental health and that kind of stuff has become more of a enough of a thing that athletes at the level of Ridley are making sure they're getting help and so on, but at the same time, that did not help your fantasy team. So Calvin Ridley at five was not a good pick. DK Metcalf, Justin Jefferson, six and seven. A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, eight and nine. I said Robinson at 10. And then Terry McLaurin, Scary Terry, and then Keenan Allen at 11 and 12. I had Amari Cooper at 14. And I wrote down all of the top 12 2021 wide receivers in half PPR from 1 to 21, okay? Amari Cooper was not a top 21 receiver this year, Andy. Wow. Isn't that crazy? That's wild.
Wow. And for his career, consistency-wise, Amari Cooper was the highest of ends WR2. Like, if you took the average, he had obviously spikes up into a top 12 guy. But, like, he was as sure a thing as you could get, is my point. Like, you could be – you're like, okay, I can put Amari Cooper – he was a set – and forget type of guy. And we saw that dip, and it was a strange year. And CeeDee Lamb, who, oh man, expecting a big jump forward for him. He was in half PPR, the 18th best wide receiver. So for guys who you had WR1 expectations, not quite. Now, the biggest surprise, and we've talked about him a bunch, a Hunter Renfro, good Lord.
Yeah.
Like... Nobody, you're a dirty liar if you say that you predicted Hunter Renfro before the season started. You could have been early to get him on your fantasy team, like me, in week three. But to say beforehand that Hunter Renfro would be a top a top 12 true WR1 is shocking. Still, to look back at that.
Yeah, it's cool. Think about this. Like, I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson and Renfro all both made it into the top 12. Depending on your league settings, right? But if you're in a Yahoo league specifically, right? Yeah, Yahoo leagues with that dual eligibility. If you're in ESPN, it may not matter, I think, for Patterson. But if you're in Yahoo with the dual, Patterson would qualify, I think, to be a top 12 or top 13 or something like that. Mm. Both Patterson and Renfro were either at the very, very end of draft, or they were undrafted, right? And it's, I mean, usually there's someone like that every year who sneaks into the top 12. Like, remember James Robinson and the running backs from last year, for example? He snuck in there after being undrafted. So it's, you know, there's always a couple of examples, but boy, for two of them to happen, like, you could have very easily had both of those guys and one of the top guys. Anyway, like, you could have very easily had four of the top 12 guys, right? If you had Patterson, Renfro off waivers, which I'm sure a lot of people did. And then you could have easily had like a Cooper Kupp in one of the mid to later rounds. And then even if you took Davante Adams with your first round pick, right? Like that was very possible. And I'm sure that won a couple people some fantasy leagues this year.
You know what's a surprising finish for a guy to me, show? And it was with the Carolina Panthers, just, man, Sam Darnold, that great start. Then total implosion. Then Cam Newton was back, and it was a mess. And by the end, you're like, I don't want anything to do with Carolina Panthers. And listen, the last stretch of the season, you probably shouldn't have. But 19th in half PPR, 19th overall. That is a WR2 finish for DJ Moore. Yeah. Can you believe that? When it was all said and done, show, DJ Moore, 191 fantasy points in half PPR, one spot below CeeDee Lamb, ahead of Brandon Cooks, ahead of T. Higgins, ahead of Terry McLaurin, ahead of Amari Cooper, ahead of Adam Thielen. Like, I would not, if you were just to say, where did DJ Moore finish? I'm like, terrible year. You know, Panthers had a bad year, but him, when it was all said and done, 19th, that's better than you would have expected if you just looked at this, how the real life season played out.
Well, and the thing, it's funny to mention that too, right? You mentioned 191 fantasy points. So CeeDee Lamb had 193.4. Godwin actually had 193.4 exactly as well. Jaylen Waddle, 193.8. Great year for a rookie, obviously, right? Jaylen Waddle, phenomenal. Michael Pittman Jr., 194.6. So essentially, from Moore to jump from like 20th, let's say, just outside the top 15 would have required like three more catches, and he probably would have made it into the top 15 or like the top 16, let's say. And I think you're right. Given how the year started for Moore, and we were all like, oh boy, maybe we crapped on Moore too much in the offseason. And then here we are with the kind of the complete opposite with like you said, Darnold collapsing and the Panthers' offensive struggles and switching from Newton to like PJ Walker and so on at the end of the year, right? Like all of that happened. And DJ Moore was still a top 20 wide receiver. I think that is very impressive. I got to ask you, who do you think, and you can pick a rookie if you want from next year, or you can pick someone who's not really super talked about this year, up to you, but someone who will sneak into, let's call it the top 15, because I know the top 12 is a truly elite, and I think after that you kind of get, there's still WR1s from 12 to 15, but if you could pick someone who was not in, let's say, the top 20 this year, okay? Someone who we haven't really discussed so far today, basically, who you think could sneak into the top 15 next year, because there's always someone. I'm sure there are going to be multiple someones. Who are you going to go with?
I'm going to Monterey St. Brown of the Lions show even thinking hard on it. And he finished 21st. But think about this. Think about a 21 finish for a Monterey St. Brown, and think about his lack of usage and production for pretty much the entire year outside of the last month. Okay? We're looking here. So his main fantasy production came from week 13 through week 18. So really, like outside of that, outside of week 13 to 18, he had zero touchdowns. Zero. No other touchdowns for the first 12 weeks of the season. None. Didn't have a 100-yard game. Had one game of 86 yards. No, sorry, that was week 13. No, he didn't. He had 70 yards was his highest in a one-off in week 4. So really, fantasy-wise, nothing. Nothing doing for 12 weeks. Week 13 to 18, dude balls out and finishes as the 21st best wide receiver in half PPR. That is astounding. On a Detroit Lions team that we know is terrible, you have limited upside at quarterback with Jared Goff, and you put up that type of numbers? Mike, give me a full year of Amon-Ra St. Brown in that offense again, hopefully with some more stability and maybe some better just overall pieces to that team around him. That has top 15 written all over him. That's a guy I want on my fantasy team.
So where would you draft someone like Amon-Ra St. Brown?
Oh, that's a good... See, the tricky thing, I love the talent, I love the player, but we have to keep in mind the team and the quarterback, right? So if we assume, let's... Okay, they're going to have high draft pick, so let's assume the Lions get generally better a little bit, right? I would be saying, if I want St. Brown, I bet you he drops a bit just from being on the Lions. I would start looking at him, show, depending where I'm drafting, I would start looking at him probably round 4. And depending how my team shakes out, that's probably where I would first start to look at him to see how my team is, who's been taken, who's still floating around. Because I think even at that point, he's going to be a steal.
You know what? That's fair, yeah. Because you don't want to, like... You don't want to overdraft a guy by any means because of like a couple of really, really, really good games. I'm not trying to discount those games, but at the same time, you don't want to overlook the guy, but you don't want to overdraft him either. Mm-hmm. I think the other important thing that I think does kind of jive with what you're saying is that Anthony Lynn and the Lions parted ways this year, right? He was the team's offensive coordinator, but I think there was some like chatter that towards the end of the season, like before Anthony Lynn left the team, the play-calling abilities and the offensive contributions from other people on the offensive staff went away from Anthony Lynn. And it was around that time that the emergence of Amon-Ra St. Brown came up, right? Like it really exploded. And I think it was like tight ends coach Ben Johnson was involved, I think, to a part. Certainly Dan Campbell himself was a big part of that, right? So I think that maybe their philosophies were a little different. It's interesting, right? Because Anthony Lynn was a much heralded addition for someone like DeAndre Swift, right? And of course, Swift got injured down the stretch, and so that wasn't really... That didn't end up mattering a whole lot, especially in the second half of the year. But it's interesting. I do really wonder if Swift is healthy. I mean, I guess if a talent like Swift is healthy, it can only really help a team like the Lions that are so like talent deficient, generally speaking. So, hey, if you can continue to get Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell involved as the offensive coordinator or offensive minds involved in how the play calling goes in Detroit, hey, sign me up for that. I'm all for that.
Well, yeah, and you talk about a guy who could sneak into the top 15. Somebody who I feel show that's going to be overdrafted is Mike Williams of the Chargers.
Yeah, that's fair.
He finished 10th in half-point PPR. And it looked like finally, it was like, wow, okay, finally at 27 years old, Mike Williams, yes, the Justin Herbert factor, the Keenan Allen, he's coming to his own finally. And up until their bye week, he certainly did. Through the first 5 weeks, now he had a stinker, only one catch in week 4, but he had six touchdowns in the first 5 weeks of the season.
It was crazy.
A dud in week 6. Then the bye after that show, he went right off. It was... He had a 97-yard game and a touchdown in Week 11, which is good, obviously. Week 13, 110 yards, no touchdown. And then in Week 18, when your fantasy season was over, he had a touchdown in 119 yards. Other than that, woof, like he just nosedived off, which goes to show, again, how good the start to his season was for him still to finish as a top 10.
Yeah, and hey, I mean, whenever you play with Justin Herbert, and I think a lot of people, like, I think if people didn't believe in Justin Herbert after his rookie year, I think seeing what he did this season and being a Pro Bowler and being phenomenal basically all season long, I think people believe now, fantasy wise at the very least. I think people like are believers in his talent, and it's just funny to think that anyone who plays with Justin Herbert is probably going to get that boost, right? Like, it's much like any players who play to a degree with the other kind of fantasy, like super fantasy relevant players. Like, how many conversations do you think you and I are going to have about Gabriel Davis and Josh Allen between now and the beginning of next season? I'm telling you, probably a lot, right? Probably a whole hell of a lot. Certainly because of what Davis did and that ridiculous game with the Chiefs in the divisional round. But, whenever you have a talent like that, I think people will always try and be believers. But, yeah, I'm with you. Top 10 finish for Mike Williams again next season. You know, especially when you think DeAndre Hopkins was injured, he didn't make it in there. Will CeeDee Lamb finally be a top 10 receiver? Will could Amari Cooper be that? Could DK Metcalf, who finished at 13, could he get just a couple more points and bump Mike Williams out? I think all of those things are all realistic potential scenarios. So, yeah, I'm with you. I'm passing on Mike Williams next year. You know, two guys who I want to get on my wide receiver core, let's call it, next season. One guy who was a top 10 receiver this year, I'm going to try and I guess it'll depend on who the quarterback is, but if it's someone even moderately successful, moderately capable, I want Diontae Johnson on my team because Diontae is so consistent. I know he has some drop issues, and Big Ben loved him, but obviously Big Ben no longer in Pittsburgh. So I think the draft rounds for Diontae probably could be pretty volatile. He could be taken pretty highly. He'd also be taken low. People believe that whoever the replacement ends up being in Pittsburgh is not that great. And my other kind of guy who wasn't in the top 20 who I think could sneak into the top 20 this year, Elijah Moore, Andy. What do you think of Elijah Moore? I think if things break right for him, I think he could do it. I do think so.
It falls kind of in that Detroit category show where you love the player. Can you trust the team?
Yeah.
Now, at least Jared Goff, say what you want, guy's been to a Super Bowl, right? I think we at least know what to expect out of Jared Goff, right? We know the type of player we can, you at least have, and that's all you want in fantasy. You want as much certainty as possible. I know what I'm getting out of Jared Goff. So then I can try to plan a bit more around it. Do I know what I'm going to get out of Zach Wilson and just a perennial tire fire that is the New York Jets? I do not. But you'd think Crowder's probably gone. Moore should get more opportunity. I like that in a PPR sense. I think he could be somebody that would be, let's say, the new Diontae Johnson. Because maybe it's my Pittsburgh and anti-Pittsburgh bias, but I'm looking at that QB depth chart right now. Of the Steelers. Right now, Show, your starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mason Rudolph.
It's not going to be Mason Rudolph. I promise you it won't be him next year.
Mason Rudolph's greatest accomplishment is dating Jeannie Bouchard. And Jeannie, shame.
He did?
Come on.
Did he really?
Shame on you.
Yes. He really did? That's hilarious.
Yes. I think they're still dating.
I didn't know that.
Jeannie, come on now. Mason? Come on. You're better than Mason Rudolph. Get a starting quarterback boyfriend.
That's hilarious.
Terrible. Terrible. Mason Rudolph, Dwayne Haskins, and Josh Dobbs. I pray to the fantasy, well, the real-life football gods, that that stays the same. Because, yes, I still think that means Najee Harris can do well. Any other receiver, goodbye. But I'm with you. I would assume the Steelers would try to upgrade at that position group. If it stands right now, you can't take a Pittsburgh receiver
and expect him
to put up points. Come on.
No.
Right? You can't do that. Like, Diontae Johnson is somebody that, yeah, until that's clarified, you got to be careful. You got to be skeptical on Mike Williams, who we said again. A.J. Brown, I think, is definitely a contender to jump back into that top 15, top 12 conversation just after a weird year and a step back for the Tennessee Titans. Things went sideways for them. Michael Pittman, who finished 15th, Show, I think is a great opportunity to even move up. We saw him slow start to the year, but we saw him and Jonathan Taylor, and Jonathan Taylor, rightfully so, got most of the headlines, but Michael Pittman really started to elevate and separate himself as that alpha receiver in Indianapolis. The question is going to be what the future of Carson Wentz is there.
I think my favorite of the top of the existing 20, top 20 from this year, 2021, to move into the top, let's say even 10, to make a jump, I think my favorite, given the changes the coaching staff has made and seen, and maybe you hope for another jump from the quarterback, is Jalen Waddle. And I know Jalen Waddle finished 17th, 193.8 total points. And again, Pittman Jr. had 194.6. Keenan Allen, who was at 15, had 204.8. Lockett had 204.9, just above him. Metcalf, 206.8. So, like, my point in saying those numbers is simply that if he had caught, like, you know, a touchdown more and, I don't know, five more catches maybe. And I know that's a lot. I freely admit that. But I'm just saying, if he had gotten just a couple more targets a game, maybe he was a top 12 receiver, right? And it won't take that much. And again, he had a very impressive rookie season. And I wonder if he will be a little overdrafted based on what happens. But when you bring in someone like Mike McDaniel, who is supposed to be, you know, an offensive-minded coach and is supposed to help Tua and is supposed to do all these things, I mean, I can't imagine in a, you know, taking a jump from, you know, your rookie year to your second year. You know, that's got to result in positive developments for someone like Jalen Waddle, because he was so good. Like, if they start using his skill set a little more down the field instead of just like kind of throwing him screens around the line of scrimmage, and he was great doing that. But if they use him a little more in like a, you know, like the DK Metcalf, to borrow an example, kind of role, Deontay Johnson kind of role down the field. Hey, I mean, I think the sky's the limit for someone like Jalen Waddle. He is so talented.
I think, Show, we're going to find out, and I'm with you on the upside of Jalen Waddle. He has the potential to pop into maybe even a top 10 in full PPR formats in that Deontay Johnson role based on volume with Tua. The difference is going to be interesting to see in a head coach that, from reports, believes in Tua. Brian Flores, and by the way, I think he's right, wasn't a buyer in Tua. He wanted Justin Herbert. Tough to argue with the former Dolphins head coach. And the fact that he doesn't have a head coaching job right now is criminal. The job he did in Miami, my goodness. He wanted Justin Herbert, didn't believe in Tua. Well, I think the proof is out there, Show. He was probably correct. He wanted Deshaun Watson in a trade. Now, whether he's going to be able to trade or not, or play or not, who knows. But the point that Flores was making was Tua is not good enough. I agree with him. But Mike McDaniel feels publicly that Tua can be the guy. The ownership wanted a head coach to do that. So if you put Tua, and if he can stay healthy, and I hate when we keep saying the word if, Show, because the more ifs you say, the less likely it is to happen, then Tua, at the very least, can maybe move into that Derek Carr type of realm of a guy who might not be fantasy relevant himself, but can make the pieces around him into fantasy stars.
I just want to see if Mike McDaniel will get to use his legs more. That's what I'm curious about. Like, Tua, I feel like maybe that's not like a focal point of his abilities, but given he is very talented and very speedy, people forget about that. He's a very speedy guy. I feel like I'm kind of surprised he didn't use it more. Maybe simply because I remember he got the injured ribs, the fractured ribs, like in week two or whatever it was. So maybe that kind of spooked him a little bit, and he was wearing a flak jacket for most of the year. Hey, if he can heal up, and I mean, you'd imagine he is by now, and they can work his legs into the offense more a little bit next season, I do think we'll see more fantasy relevant games for him. But if that doesn't change, yeah, I think the Derek Carr of the future, while it's not what you want for such a high draft pick, it may be what you get, right?
It might, and again, that goes to, you're not drafting Tua as your QB1, but you can feel confident in the pieces around him, like with Derek Carr, Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller before he got hurt, right? You can have confidence in surrounding pieces, just not the QB. And I'm just not buying Tua, Show, and we'll break and get to Jeff Ulrich in a moment. But I'm not buying him because that injury history is so intense. Because it's not, people focus on the hip and the severe, almost career-ending hip injury. Before that, though, he had concussions. He had injured fingers. He had ankle injuries on both legs. Every year in college, it just seemed like there was multiple things that kept happening. And it's tough to get away from that. And I don't know if you can rely on somebody like that. So it depends. Like, they have a lot of draft capital still. Where do the Dolphins go? The answer at quarterback behind him at Jacoby Brissett is not on the roster. So it looks like it'll probably be an all-in year for Tua. And you kind of see what happens. At the very least, at least for 1 year, that should be very good news for Jalen Waddle.
Oh, yeah. Like I said to you, Andy, I think the sky's the limit for Waddle. I think the rookie draft class from this past year was great, right? I mean, certainly headlined by someone like Ja'Marr Chase, but Waddle, Devonta Smith, even like given the kind of situation he was in with like the kind of turmoil with the passing offense, and just, you know, Hurts doesn't throw the ball a ton anyways, I thought he did pretty well, all things considered, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, great year for wide receivers.
No, you're right. Okay, we're going to take the break. Top of the next hour, we're going to bring in our guy, Jeff Ulrich, analyst for DraftKings. Get your fantasy lineups ready. Your DFS plays for Super Bowl Sunday. Jeff Ulrich joins us next on The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour two of the Super Sunday edition of The Fantasy Show kicks off right now across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andy McNamara alongside Shaw Ali. Get us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSAli, at The Fantasy Show. Give us your best fantasy play for today. Who's going to be the top fantasy performer, folks? Okay? Who's it going to be? Okay, give us your takes. You can text in as well, 590-590, name and location. We also have our Listener League DraftKings contest. We'll put it out on Twitter, but if you don't have Twitter or you want texted to you, we will gladly send it to you on the People's Text Line, 590-590. Just say you want the DraftKings contest link, and we will get it to you. Speaking of DraftKings, one of their fine analysts, our guy Jeff Ulrich, is on the line. Jeff, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks a lot for having me on this big day, obviously.
Yes. Hey, man. Well, thanks for getting up early with us. We know you're out west, so appreciate you getting up and getting ready for this one. And Jeff, we were talking before the break. We were doing our sort of wide receiver look back, look ahead to the season. And right. Some guys who for, you know, top 12 who popped in, obviously surprising, like a Hunter Renfro out of nowhere, which was shocking. And also guys who were not in the top 12, like a CeeDee Lamb, like an A.J. Brown, that were sort of surprising. Anybody that jumps to mind to you who is like, okay, either they were a top 12 who you don't think will be next year, or who were outside of it, maybe it was, you know, DeAndre Hopkins injured or something, or somebody that will jump back in to that WR1 conversation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I want to say that, you know, Deebo Samuel, he wasn't a surprise for me because I was really high on him. At the same time, I didn't expect Deebo Samuel to be like the third best wide receiver, second best, regardless of depending on what scoring you're using, like fantasy wide receiver in the league. I mean, that's still a shock. But a player who I think like could easily jump back in who kind of had a bad year. I mean, there's definitely like a handful of guys, but I mean, I would say that guys like AJ Brown and Chase Claypool, I mean, they're so young. And there's just so much talent available with both those guys. I mean, A.J. Brown, I think, was obviously more of a product of injuries than anything. But a guy like Chase Claypool, I mean, similar talent. We know he's going to have a different quarterback. I really feel like Chase Claypool was you don't want to blame the quarterback too much for wide receiver play. I think that gets a little bit old quick because we've seen a lot of wide receivers do well with bad quarterbacks. But man, like Ben Roethlisberger could not throw the ball more than 5 yards this year. And I just can't see how that didn't negatively affect Chase Claypool in a big way. So I always like to bet on the talent, and that's kind of why I like Deebo Samuel to have a big year at the start of the year. And I think guys like Claypool and Brown are guys you should be a high on for next year because most likely you're going to see one of those type of players. And Cortland Sutton is actually another one out in Denver, really talented young player. One of those guys is probably going to pop up and be like a top 10 player because there's just too much talent involved with the player specifically. So,
Jeff, let me ask you this because when Andy and I were kind of putting out our guys who were outside the top 20 to jump into the top 20, top 15, Andy went with Amon-Ra St. Brown. I went with Elijah Moore. What do you feel like for those guys specifically, right? Like the Lions, the Jets, two teams that struggled this year will probably struggle again this coming season, like to a degree at least. Like, how do you feel about though, like guys on bad teams with a little bit of turmoil, maybe not at quarterback necessarily, but maybe with the play calling? How do you feel about those two names going into the 2022 NFL season?
So we had Amon-Ra St. Brown. Who was the other one? Sorry, it kind of cut out.
Elijah Moore,
right, yeah, sorry. I mean, it's interesting. The Detroit Lions offensive players were serious bargains this year. I mean, it's everyone kind of stayed away from DeAndre Swift a little bit. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown, some people had him hyped up a little bit, but I don't think many people bought in heavy at the start of the year. But, man, like, I mean, you just show, like, when there's not much depth on the depth chart, I mean, certain guys are going to get a lot of targets, right? I don't know if that's necessarily going to change for Amon-Ra St. Brown next year. I mean, A, he proved himself to be like a really nice slot receiver. And B, I mean, you've got a coach there who, you know, drafted defense in the first round this year. Like, I think he's going to keep building around there. I think the opportunities will be there for St. Brown. I don't necessarily want to go heavy on him if he's going to get, like, really up there in the draft, starts going, like, top 15 or something. But that's I would bet on him over Elijah Moore. I mean, Elijah Moore has a murkier depth chart to work over. I mean, the Jets still have quite a few quality receivers. It's actually, like, one of their deeper positions. We'll see who arrives there and if there's any moves. I mean, obviously, we're still very early in the offseason, and we're not even in the offseason. But, you know, we're in the stages where lots of moves could be made, and Elijah Moore could be sitting in a much different role by the time training camps. But I would lean him on Ross St. Brown just for the fact that, you know, opportunity is everything in the NFL. Again, Amon Ross St. Brown, he had the opportunity over Elijah Moore simply for the fact that he had a better depth chart, and I don't see that changing much. Now, if the Lions go out and sign, like, a big-name wide receiver, I'll flip-flop on this really quickly. But, I would lean with the Detroit Lions player there.
Yeah, still super early, obviously. Yeah, draft, free agency, all that good stuff coming up. In conversation with Jeff Ulrich, analyst from DraftKings. You can find him on Twitter at the Fantasy Grind. Okay, Jeff, let's get to some DraftKings contests here. And again, we're having our Listener League contest. We'll put the link out on Twitter at the Fantasy Show, and we'll text it to you if you'd like as well to jump in. So, different contests, of course, but one of the Showdown Captains one are, I think, one of the most fun ones on the platform, because you have that 1.5 fantasy point bonus, but it also comes up 1.5 fantasy point or the salary to go in with that $50,000 salary cap. I want to get your take on this. We know Cooper Kupp is a stud. He's a monster. He's a fantasy point. He averaged 28.2 fantasy points on DraftKings. Good Lord, Jeff. That's crazy. The question is always, though, we know Cooper Kupp, barring injury, is going to have a monster day. Where do you put him in your lineup? Because you need him in there, likely, but so's everybody else. So if he has a great day, it doesn't really benefit you per se, because everybody else is going to have him. How do you balance somebody like that in your DFS lineup?
Yeah, so for Showdown, I mean, it's, you know, you've always got to think about a roster construction, what other people are doing, because, you know, we've got a limited player pool to work with, right? So, like you mentioned, everyone's going to play Cooper Kupp today. I mean, he's going to be insanely high owned, and he should be. I mean, like you said, he's just so consistent. So putting him in the captain spot, like, you'll get lower ownership there, but in this game too, I mean, we don't have a ton of what you'd call, like, tremendous value underneath. So if you're using Cooper Kupp, you know, you might have to play for some kind of almost a slower paced game where, you know, Cooper Kupp does all the scoring. Maybe you use, like, Matt Gay down as like your field goal kicker on the Rams as well. Maybe you throw in, like, a Samaje Perine to hopefully, maybe he just comes up and Mixon has a bad day on the ground and Perine grabs, like, 4 or 5 catches for you. And then you'll have enough salary to, like, perhaps use Stafford and, like, one other receiver. But you're going to have to dip down there. And I think in that scenario, you're almost playing for a certain style of game, which, like I said, probably going to be more lower scoring. So it's not necessarily – I don't really love putting Cooper Kupp in the captain spot for DraftKings, even though, like you said, he's the most likely player to be the highest scorer. Football is just so highly variable. And on the other side, like, we have a situation where, you know, the Bengals wide receivers have all taken turns having big games. So, yeah, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, they're not as consistent as Cooper Kupp. No one in this game is as consistent as Cooper Kupp, but their ceiling, like, T. Higgins has multiple games with 100 yards and a touchdown, and he's only 11-4 in the captain spot. Like, you put him in there, you've still got a over $7,500 average, and T. Higgins, you know, going to be roaming the field, probably not getting Jalen Ramsey coverage much. So I kind of like going down. I think you can even get more aggressive, though, in a game like this. Like, we have two quarterbacks who are really consistent with passing yards. We have two big-name wide receivers you can pay up for. I think you can do something crazy, like maybe even use Tyler Boyd, but maybe even use a guy like Kendall Blanton, or maybe even go with, like, a DST in your captain spot. That's how aggressive I think you can get, because if you put someone like that there, like, say, let's say we put the Bengals DST there, they come up with, you know, 15 points. You can pretty much fit in whoever you want. So if it's a high scoring game, if there's, you know, like three or four guys that get over 20 fantasy points, and the Bengals DST does come up with like a big turnover, you might be surprised. We see things like that happen when it's when there's a lot of big offensive production on the slate. So showdown is something you can always get a little bit crazy with, and it's certainly a way to be unique by using someone cheaper in the captain spot, because I think most people looking at this contest, a lot of casual fans just playing DFS for the first time, they're just going to assume, I got to put Cooper Kupp in there today. And then, you know, everyone's got Cooper Kupp up there. Whereas if you put Cooper Kupp in the flex, you go with like a really low end captain, you're going to be super unique. And if your captain hits, man, I'm telling you, like you will be at the head of the rankings quite fast, because things change fast in showdown.
You know, that's a good point, because one guy I was considering putting in the captain spot today here, Jeff, was Van Jefferson. Because Van Jefferson, I think when he is,
yeah.
I think he was outside the captain spot, he was 7,500. So inside he was 60, you know, just a little under 6,000. So inside the captain spot, pardon me, he was just a little over 7,500. And like you said, you can get really aggressive with these various moves. So I like that a lot. When you look at, because something Andy and I were kind of talking about was just when you look beyond the usual suspects for both members of this offense, right? So you look past the Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. You look past the Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham Jr., probably Van Jefferson as well. And if you want to pass the running backs off, sure, you probably can do that. Darrell Henderson Jr. is likely to play today. I believe McVay said yesterday or on Friday that he was actually going to play, even though that probably will be made official, maybe a couple hours before game time later tonight. But still, yep. Darrell Henderson, does that scare you off using Cam Akers at all?
Yeah, I'm not very bullish on Cam Akers for multiple reasons. And, I mean, obviously Darrell Henderson Jr., being active is like definitely a part of that. I mean, you know, he not only is Henderson likely going to be active, he's almost certainly going to be active, but, you know, McVay has come out and said, you know, he's going to ride the hot hand, which to me, it's like a vote of no confidence in Cam Akers. And like, really, why do the Rams have any reason to be confident in Cam Akers at this point? He's averaged 3 yards per carry over three games. He just about fumbled the Rams directly out of the playoffs against the Bucks. And I mean, you know, he hasn't done anything. I mean, he doesn't look really good. He just, look, the guy's coming back from an Achilles injury. You can understand why he's not at 100% capacity, right? So some people I've heard talking this week, well, the Bengals don't really have that good a rush defense. And yeah, they do. They have given up some like big yards per carry, but they're not what I'd call a terrible defense either. They're very much like a bend but don't break. Like, they don't give up a ton of big plays either. So I think you'll see a mix, and you know, if Sony Michel gets in early, that's actually the player I would be more worried about, because the Rams did kind of ride Sony Michel a couple times late in the year when Akers was out. And I think if Michel comes in, rips off a couple big plays, I don't think you're going to see Cam Akers much in this game. So Cam Akers, if you're on him, like, you're really going to need a lot of things to fall your way. You might need the Rams to get up big to really get like 20 carries, and Cam Akers hasn't shown the burst that he's going to get you like a big long touchdown. I don't see that scenario happening. So even though he's only 6,400 in the flex, and like, you know, he's a running back, even if he does, you know, even if Henderson does take like 10 touches and Michelle takes like 10 touches, he's still probably going to get you like five or six touches. So it's not like there's good usage involved there, and he's still got the chance to lead the backfield as well. But man, I think you go with the upside and guys like Tyler Boyd, who are cheaper than him. I mentioned Kendall Blanton, I think has a good chance of just popping up with like six catches or something. I like those guys a lot better. I'd rather rely on the pass catchers in this game. I think both these teams kind of trend towards the pass anyways.
Yeah, Jeff, I think that's a great point, and especially with McVay saying, yeah, ride the hot hand. Like, that screaming committee. He is telling you it's a committee, which we hate. In fantasy football,
yeah,
exactly. We don't want that.
It stinks. I mean, it stinks for all of them. I mean, I like Henderson. I'd like to make some kind of case for Darrell Henderson at 1,600, but that's it's really thin. I mean, like, he could easily get like two touches in this game, and then you're like, wow, that idiot on the fantasy show you brought in who told me to play Henderson. You know, so I mean, the thing about Henderson is when you're playing the showdown on DraftKings today, it's, there's not many other options down there, right? Like, Ben Skoranek is 600. He does see, like, you know, 20, 30% of the snaps every week, but he doesn't really get targets.
No.
Henderson is the only guy under 2K who could conceivably like really put up a decent fantasy day. So there is some logic in using him. And I mean, again, like we're look, if you're playing in the big DraftKings showdown, you're trying to beat 400,000 people. So getting creative and taking risks, like that's what this contest is all about. You've got to take big risks. So Henderson is definitely should be someone you should be looking at. So is Samaje Perine down there. It's just they're really volatile, and either of them could end up with like one fantasy point. And I don't think anyone would be shocked today. So,
well, if we look, let's look at the other side for running back Joe Mixon, and on the season averaging 18.2 fantasy points in DraftKings contests. If we expect, and it really depends how you think the game's going to go. If you expect the Bengals to be down and them having to throw the ball, then well, that means less activity likely for Joe Mixon, who's been extremely consistent all year long and has really had some big games. But if we're looking at that 18.2 fantasy point average here, Jeff, and he's a $9,600 salary, which is pricey, would you bank on the over or under of that 18.2 fantasy points for Joe Mixon today?
So, again, like let's say we were doing a prop, I would probably take the under. I have a lot of respect for the Rams defense, and Mixon, he's a grinder, and the Bengals do stick with the run game, but the Rams just don't allow a ton of rushing touchdowns. Like, they're really tough in the red zone, and I do think there's a good chance Mixon just gets held out of the end zone, and if that happens, he's going to have a hard time hitting me over here. But, you know, again, for showdown purposes, like, other than Cooper Kupp, I mean, Joe Mixon, you know, of the non-quarterback skill players, he's got the best upside in this game. I mean, we've seen him go, you know, get 28 touches, like against Pittsburgh early in the year, went for 35 points. You know, he's a player where if the Bengals get ahead, they will run him 25 times, and they will have no problem doing that. So there is a lot of upside with Mixon. It's just he's volatile. But I do like him for the showdown, because if you're not using Cooper Kupp in the captain and you don't like my idea of like taking a high risk player, like, like a Van Jefferson or like a Tyler Boyd, I think Mixon gives you the next best thing to put in your captain spot, because he will not be as highly owned as Cooper Kupp. He won't even be close to the same ownership, but he saves you a lot of cash, and he's got very similar upside. Again, it's just, the upside doesn't show up as much as Cooper Kupp, but we know he can get you 30 points. So I look at him as a very interesting play. If he does end up going off, I mean, I won't be shocked, but it'll definitely likely be in a scenario where like the Bengals kind of take control of this game early. You know, maybe Joe Mixon breaks off a big play, and then the Rams are just playing from behind while Mixon is just taking a bunch of carries in the second half.
Jeff, before we let you go, like you said, today is the biggest event of the year, the Waste Management Phoenix Open. No, I'm kidding. This is Super Bowl. It's Super Bowl Sunday. But I do have to ask you, just because we don't get to chat with you super often, because today is the final day of the Phoenix Open, can I get a take from you on whether or not Brooks Koepka at +300 to win this thing outright is where I should be putting my money, or you have another name there to go with?
So, okay, this is, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you know I love the golf. And to me, this is the biggest event of the day. I love the Waste Management Phoenix Open. But Brooks Koepka yesterday, man, he made so many long par saves. I don't think he can keep the momentum going today. I mean, I don't really think he played that well yesterday, but he just scrambled like a maniac. And if you've watched the Waste Management before, you know that typically, like, the leaders coming down Sunday, they don't really do that well. Like, we've seen a lot of comeback winners. Brooks was, like, a bunch of shots behind last year. The first time he won this, but way back in, like, 2015, I think Brooks came from, like, four or five shots back, too. I think he can go really deep down the board today. I like Scottie Scheffler at minus 12. I actually think he might be in the final group. But, you know, if I'm going to target a top player and you're like, I just can't, like, there's too many big names here, I would target Scheffler. This guy is absolutely due for a win. He played really well at the Farmers. He just couldn't get his putter going. But these surfaces are much easier to putt. I think Scheffler, he putted really well here last year, too. I think he's well overdue for a win. I like the way he's looking. But I'm going to throw out Alex Norton. I'm even going even deeper. At minus 9, Louis Oosthuizen stays in at 100-1, man. He's five shots back. But I'm telling you, like, this event, we've just seen it too many times that you can go deep today. So I don't really like Brooks. Hopefully it doesn't make me look too bad, because I think I told people to fade on at the start of the week too. But I like Scheffler if I'm going from the top. But I think you can dabble in guys You can even throw in Adam Hadwin if you're feeling Canadian today. But this is an event where, we've seen a lot of guys come from like 3, 4, even 5 shots back and grab the win on Sunday.
I like it.
You can follow him on Twitter at TheFantasyGrind. Jeff, always fun, man. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
All right, there is Jeff Ulrich, analyst from DraftKings. As I said on Twitter, great follow at TheFantasyGrind for football and for golf, their show.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not know that tournament was on.
Will I? You know what? Is that not the best name for like a relatively speaking major golf tournament? The Waste Management Open. I usually just refer to it as the Phoenix Open, but still, Waste Management Phoenix Open. I was just curious. It's like the one major sporting event. I know there are a couple other things going on today, but like the one major sporting event before like 6:30 p.m. Eastern, because nobody wants to compete with the Super Bowl. Wisely so. I was just curious. Got to get that in there. Do you have any favorite before we break here, Andy? Any favorite Super Bowl prop plays of your own? You can go anywhere you want with this. Like, you can go like, I don't know, length of the national anthem, Tails Never Fails. You can go like a player prop, anything you want. I was just curious if anything stuck out to you.
Yeah, I found a couple. I went with heads. Just there's no reason. It just went with heads. Who cares? Just felt right. Felt right.
Contrary, Andy. Okay.
Yeah. This is the one I like here. Okay. Ja'Marr Chase more receiving yards than Cooper Kupp. Okay. Ja'Marr Chase more receiving yards than Cooper Kupp. +177. If you go with Kupp, -286. And it's. I just feel we know how amazing Cooper Kupp is. We know Cooper Kupp's going to get the ball a lot, right, Joe? But we also know that for Ja'Marr Chase, it's a case where, all right, well, this is a guy who had 700-plus receiving yard games this year. Two of them were for more than 200 yards. While it's likely Kupp is going to get more receiving yards, I think there is a great chance that Ja'Marr Chase could beat his, you know, it just takes a couple runs, right, Joe? Just takes a couple. And then you go off. So I like Ja'Marr Chase more receiving yards than Cooper Kupp. I got another one, but I'll let you give me one of yours that you like.
Well, I have a couple that are like halftime show related. So if you have another like a real one,
yes.
Yeah, go with yours then.
Okay. Okay. I'm saying take people. Okay. Listen to Uncle Andy here. You're taking the under on both on rushing yards for Cam Akers, which was set, it was at 64.5, went down to 62.5, under for Cam Akers, and I'm going to say under for Joe Mixon as well, for rushing yards, not total yards, but rushing yards. Joe Mixon had 65 rushing yards or less 10 times this year's show. Okay. So while he may have made it up on the receiving side, had a great fantasy season, we talked about 18.2 average fantasy points, on the rushing side specifically, especially if the Bengals are down, this is going to be where Joe Mixon will run for less than 64.5 rushing yards. So I think you take the under on both plays for Mixon and for Akers. So those are my two other ones.
I like those ones because, I think there's a really good chance we see a lot of passing today. Just like, I mean, yeah. I know that's the way the NFL has trended in recent memory, but still, I think I like that one a lot. So yeah, under on rushing yards for both major running backs. Okay, let me get your opinion on my halftime props, okay? Yeah. Then we'll hit the break. Artist to perform first, okay? So here are the artists at the Super Bowl. And for I wish we could play the music. Of course, we can't, pod safe and all, but still. Artist to perform first. Dr. Dre, Mary J. Blige, Snoop Dogg, Kendrick Lamar, and Eminem are the five artists that will be performing at the Super Bowl later today. So Dr. Dre is +150. So he's currently the most likely to perform first, right? So Dre is 150, Mary J. Blige +200, Snoop Dogg +375, Kendrick Lamar +650, and Eminem +700. I'm leaning. I know Dre is he's a +150 for a reason, but I think I'm going to lean Snoop Dogg at +375 just because I think that's a good way to get the LA crowd, try and get them at least a little hyped up at halftime.
Show, I love where your mind's at because I was thinking the same thing. Dre seems more like you don't want Dr. Dre to start. You know, I just get that feeling like he comes, he's one of those, you have either Snoop or maybe even a couple after, and then you have Drake come in. Maybe there's a pause, and he just has that more like closer to the main event portion of the show feel, you know. Eminem as well, I think, will be later on. So I think it's like Snoop, then you go with a couple others, and then it's a mix of maybe Eminem and then Dre maybe last. I think that's right, because you want to get this crowd into it. Snoop is, you know, has become just such a lovable caricature of himself. That's the one to get it kicking. I think I'm with you.
I think so too. Snoop. Yeah. I think so too. I think that's the reasoning, right? Like, I think everyone, it's not that any of these five people are not famous. Everyone knows every single one of these five people are. It's just Snoop is so like ubiquitous to Los Angeles. I feel like it's the easiest way to like ease people, even on like internationally, ease people into a big time halftime show, Snoop Dogg. So I like Snoop at 375. Well, here's one more, then we'll break. Who will the Super Bowl MVP? This is for post game. Who will the Super Bowl MVP, whoever it is, mention first in his speech? Okay, who will he mention first in his speech? Here are the options. Okay, teammates, of course, as you might imagine, leads the way at -125. God is +225. Family or family members +550. The city itself, +500, the coach +750, the owner +2,000. Don't pick that one, people. Come on. It's +2,000 for a reason. Imagine if either Joe Burrow or Matthew Stafford or any of the potential other candidates for Super Bowl MVP thank the owner of either team first. Boy, that'd be rough. Or does not mention any of the above +1,600. I don't know what else you can mention if you're not picking any of those options. But still, teammates, God, family or family members, city, coach, owner, none of the above.
How about they should put one in like +20,000 on thanking yourself first. Oh, how juicy would that be? Matthew Stafford comes up. Matt, your journey from Detroit all these years, you finally did it. Oh, congratulations. And he goes, I'd like to thank myself. I've done it myself. And he just goes total heel, all in. How amazing. You know what? Whoever the MVP is, if they thank themselves for a show, I will personally buy a jersey of that player, and we'll give it away on the show. An authentic one, because that will be my new favorite player if they do that. The owner, too. Like, okay, if you're the MVP, like if you're Joe Burrow or Matt Stafford, you got to figure, okay, you're probably going to be the MVP if you win. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you, like, if you're a family member, wouldn't you like, hey, Joe, if you win, thank Mike Brown? Because then we'll, you know, get some like cousin with a different last name to go in, and you win a ton of money, right? Like, doesn't that seem very obvious?
I could see that. Yeah, okay, I could see that. I guess,
you know, I don't think they will. Maybe they're not as crooked of a mind as mine, but right. I would say I think if it's Burrow, he goes team, mm-hmm. and oh, if it's Stafford, I don't think either of them seem super godly.
I think, you know what, I'll say this. I think Stafford is relatively religious. So I think if Stafford wins, I think you go God personally.
Ooh,
but
okay.
if it's Burrow, I think you go teammates, go team. I think you go city. I could easily see Joe Burrow being like, this one goes out to the people of Cincinnati, and then like cut to people chilly. In Cincinnati going bananas, right? Like, I could easily see that.
Cheap pop by Burrow to Cincinnati. Yeah. Just goes to people just puking up all their Skyline chili, all that.
Thanks for that image. Appreciate it.
It looks like it on the plate. Anyway. I love those prop plays. Okay, let's take the break. We're going to go over our Super Bowl DFS plays, our Super Bowl DraftKings contest. Remember, we have our Listener League one out as well. So if you want that, text us 590-590 or hit us up on Twitter. We'll tweet that out as well. And we'll get our DFS plays, our full roster, after the break, as well as our Super Bowl Danger Zone pick when the Fantasy Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Super Sunday edition of the Fantasy Show continues right now across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andy McNamara alongside Show Ali. Give us a follow on Twitter, folks, at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. If you miss any of the program show, you don't just have to find us on Twitter or on sportsnet.ca anymore. We're all over on the podcast world, right?
That's right. Yeah, of course, you can go to podcast.sportsnet.ca to get all the podcast destinations. But if you search us up on, I believe it's Apple Podcasts and Spotify, Google Play, I think is coming too. But yeah, there you go. You can find us anywhere you want. So leave us a, you know, subscribe, like, review, all the things to do with podcasts, and we appreciate it.
You know what we'll do, show? Not for this because I just thought of it. But in other weeks, we'll give away, because I think of things like on the fly and it's too late to do them. But for going forward, next week we'll do something where, like, if you leave a 5-star review on the podcast, we'll enter you to win like a giant pizza prize or something.
Ooh,
okay. I'm looking at them right now. I got the new vouchers here, folks. Got the new vouchers right in my hot little hands. So we're going to give those away, and we will buy your love. I've said it open. We're not shy. We will buy your love and appreciation and support with delicious Domino's pizza. That's what we will do for you, the people. So we'll work that in. So get the do the podcast, but we'll work in some sort of, you know, 5-star review bonus benefit program for our loyal listeners.
Yeah, look, like you said, no shame here on the fantasy show. We will buy people's love, and I think people know we are not above giving away pizza to do that. So yeah, let's go, let's do it.
No, pin me, pay me, as the old wrestling saying goes, right, folks. Pin me, pay me. Also, we'll be giving away pizza. We've got a contest up from our friends at UFF Sports and at AndyMC81. If you subscribe to the YouTube channel for the American Football Legends League, www.afll.live, afll.live takes you right to the YouTube page. That's where you'll see the NFL Legends, the video game simulation, the all-time NFL greats play head-to-head, including this week. Starts today at 11 a.m. Eastern, all Sunday into Monday for the game of the week. I do the play-by-play call, the game of the week one. But if you subscribe and retweet that that tweet at AndyMC81, you will be entered again to win some pizza prizes as well as some Score cryptocurrency and a UFAFL hat from UFF Sports. So a lot of prizes there. But first step is go just click the little subscribe button on YouTube at AFLL.live and enjoy those cool fantasy matchups. Joe Montana versus Roger Staubach and head-to-head type of thing. Jim Brown versus Lawrence Taylor. Just a whole bunch of cool stuff there. Show, let's do our DFS contest. We had Jeff Ulrich on a little bit earlier, and now we have, and we have our Listener League one. You want the link? Just text us, 590-590. We'll send it to you. Who are you putting in your captain spot? Because, folks, remember, it's 1.5 fantasy points, but also 1.5 times the salary in that $50,000 salary cap in the DraftKings lineup. So who did you decide on, show, in your captain spot?
You know what? In a lineup that actually does have both quarterbacks in here, I do have Stafford and I do have Burrow in my in my lineup here. My captain is neither of them, and I did go with the guy that I pitched to Jeff. Van Jefferson is going to be my captain today, Andy. Okay, $7,800 is what it costs to have Van Jefferson in lineup. I did consider going with T. Higgins, but even Higgins in the starting lineup, or pardon me, in the captain spot would be, I think it was like a little over 11,000.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Like, that's not a bad pick, because especially in PPR, he gets just peppered with targets. But you know, I feel like with Tyler Higbee out, sure, Kendall Blanton could pop a little bit, I suppose. But I think my favorite player to pick up the slack in Higbee's absence is Van Jefferson. So I'm going to go with Van Jefferson as my captain. No, like I said, Stafford and Burrow are both in this lineup, just not as the captains.
I like it. I also have, obviously, Cooper Kupp. Well, no, you don't have Cooper Kupp.
I do not.
I have Cooper Kupp. I have Cooper Kupp in the lineup. I went and I was leaning. I was like, okay, maybe I'll put Cooper Kupp and just jump in all the points there, but that's super expensive in the captain spot. Then I was thinking maybe Jamar Chase, maybe even the kicker, McPherson. But Jeff sold me on this show. I'm going bold. I'm going Kendall Blanton.
Okay.
For the Rams. I'm going Blanton.
I like it.
Blanton. It's Tyler Higbee's not going to play. Blanton has been getting now, again, just how much the receivers are peppered in this group. You need him to have a touchdown. But the reception value the last 2 weeks, 5 targets, 5 catches last week. Okay? That got you 10.7 fantasy points. Week before, 2 catches on 2 targets and a touchdown. So all he needs is like 5 or 6 catches, squeeze in a little touchdown, and I got a captain for $6,900, which allows me then to put in Jamar Chase, Joe Burrow, Cooper Kupp, I got Van Jefferson, and I got the kicker McPherson. I don't know. I just feel the way, especially if that defense of the Rams, at least to start, show, is is as stingy as they could. Maybe it's a they'll bend but not break, and maybe there'll be a few field goals early.
Yeah, you know what? I do like, especially for Cincinnati, I do like them, you know, not to stall out necessarily, but to get down near the red zone, right? Maybe in the red zone, maybe shortly out, just a little bit outside, and maybe have a little bit of trouble if the Rams tighten up, or if the offensive line for the Bengals have troubles, right? So I do think that is probably conducive to someone like Evan McPherson being in your lineup. I wonder. It does make me wonder how many lineups will have someone like Matt Gay in there, but. Yeah, I don't. If you're going to have a kicker, I feel like most people are rightly going with Evan McPherson. The rest of my lineup, I said Jefferson is in the captain spot, $7,800. Stafford and Burrow without the captain bump is Stafford is $10,800. Burrow is $10,600. I put Jamar Chase in there, $10,400. So that, you know, with three players in five digits, that doesn't leave a lot of money elsewhere. So my last two guys, I went with Odell Beckham Jr. at $8,400. And I mentioned I didn't have Kupp in there. So my last guy, much like Jeff said, I decided to fill out the lineup with the only guy who I think has a good chance at having some kind of production on the ground, Darrell Henderson Jr. at $1,600.
The $1,600 play for Henderson makes a ton of sense, Joe, because you're away from Cam Akers at $6,400, which he's averaging 3 yards a carry. Now, I think Cam Akers is going to be a value next year. Coming off late in the season off that major injury, I think he's going to be just fine next year. Came late in the season. He doesn't have the burst, didn't have a whole training camp. I'm not surprised. He's not doing exceptional. Cam Akers, big picture, I believe, is going to be a great value next year. But for this game, with Sean McVay telling you, it's going to be a committee. Sony Michel could go. Cam Akers, you could go back and forth. You could switch everybody. For the value of the price and for the production, and Sony Michel's 5,000. I bet we don't see too much of a fantasy point difference between Cam Akers, Sony Michel, and Henderson. And for that fact, you get Henderson in at 1,600. And heck, Joe, maybe he gets a touchdown, balls at the one, right? Maybe he runs, gets a 12-yard run or two. And you're getting as good or better of a value, fantasy point-wise, than those higher-priced players.
Yeah, that's kind of why I went, right? It's just how many opportunities for someone who is that talented, who we saw like be very good all season until he got injured late in the year, like how many opportunities in DFS are you going to have a guy with $1,600 in there, right? Like will probably have more than, like, who are the other guys? Just looking it up, like the other guys in that same general price range. I mentioned Trent Taylor at 1,000, and then the next guy was Samaje Perine at 2,400, right? And then the guy below him is Skoronek, right? The Rams wide receiver. So, and he was $600, right? So I don't think, like, it's just given the other guys in that generally speaking price range, I think you're probably okay if you put in Darrell Henderson. Admittedly, it is a bit of a, I don't know if it's like a contrarian play necessarily, but it is a bit of a dice roll, right? Because, I mean, it's very possible, like you said, for your prop play, right? It's possible no one has a very good game on the ground because Stafford is just slinging it the whole game. That's also very possible.
Yep. Or it's two split and you got three guys with 20-something yards each. Like that could happen. But to your point, again, I'd rather Henderson at 1,600 than Perine at 2,400. Like, at least Henderson's been a starter. Unless Mixon gets injured, why would we see Perine?
Yeah, I know people are a little bit on the, like, you know, going back to the AFC Championship game, I think Perine had, like, what, three or four catches and a touchdown or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Which, hey, you can't take that away from him. And he was very good while they, like, weathered that storm in the first half. Absolutely. But it's just, generally speaking, I feel like the player who's going to get those targets in the passing game will just end up being Joe Mixon, right? Like, he is a workhorse, and I think that play in particular where Perine kind of zigzagged his way for the touchdown, I think is not an outlier, but I don't know that I would bet on that happening, given that, like you said, he's just not the starter, right? So I think I'm going to avoid Perine today if I can, even at that price point, just because, I mean, like we've said a bunch of times today, the usual suspects are the guys who are probably going to be involved, which is why outside of Kupp, Beckham, Jefferson, Chase, Higgins, Boyd, Akers, Mixon, and even then it's a little iffy. Outside of those guys, I'm not going to be too thrifty, let's say, with the lower guys on this menu here.
Yeah. Like, let's say if you had $2,500 left over, you go Perine or Henderson, I guess it's what you choose, but I'm totally with you. The interesting thing, too, is when you look at the DSTs for the DraftKings DFS lineups here, show. And while both defenses, especially, well, the Bengals overachieved tremendously this year. But with these high-powered offense, the defenses can still do well and still give up a lot of points or, at the very least, show a lot of catches and yards, right? Like, you could have a game where the over-under finishes, you know, each team is scoring 28, 30 points each, and the defenses can still be good. Like, the defenses can still hold, or but the offense is so potent that you're not going to get the fantasy return. So if we're looking at it, the only one I'd be interested in getting in a DFS lineup is the Rams, based on the fact that the Bengals give up a ton of sacks. That 9-sack game is just ridiculous. And if they're smart, they will try to get the ball out of the hands of Joe Burrow as fast as possible. Because if the Rams get 7 to 9 sacks, we could be looking at Aaron Donald as the guy to get that MVP from your prop play conversation earlier.
Yeah, it's true. 55 sacks allowed in the regular season or something like that. It was just an absurd number. You know, one of my favorite prop plays, pardon me, to kind of stack onto that, Andy. So obviously we know about Aaron Donald. We know about Von Miller. I think I had seen, at least this, the odds on this may have changed, but Leonard Floyd to record a sack, I think it was like total sacks Leonard Floyd over 0.5, so basically will he record a sack or not, was like plus 120 or plus 150 on Friday, so it may have changed, but he is lining up against, you would imagine, just given where he lines up on a regular basis, against the right tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals. And the right tackle's name is Isaiah Prince. And Isaiah Prince, since he took over for Riley Reiff, the injured right tackle, Riley Reiff, he got injured in like week 11, week 12, thereabouts. Since Prince took over, Prince has a pass blocking grade of, get this, out of 100, okay, 51. Okay. 51 out of 100, which is, for an offensive tackle, especially at the right tackle, is I would say pretty bad. So I think, he's let up three, four sacks this year. He's given a lot of pressures up. You could say a lot of that for a lot of the members of the offensive line. But boy, if Leonard Floyd, who has been a monster this year, I think 9.5 sacks, 18 quarterback hits. So if he's the guy lining up opposite Isaiah Prince, I mean, if you have Floyd, Miller, and Donald, I mean, I would take the odds on any one of them to record a sack today.
Man, that Floyd one's interesting, show. That's really interesting. Yeah, because obviously that's a weak point. That whole offensive line in general has not been good.
Yeah.
And needs to be improved, which is why we're all screaming at the Bengals to take Penei Sewell and not Jamar Chase. And they still need an offensive lineman, but Jamar Chase, obviously, really good.
Worked out pretty well.
But that's going to be the fact. And I hope, for the competitive sake and entertainment sake of the game, that the Bengals, at least to start, try to get the ball out quick slants. Get it out of Burrow's hands, man. Like, just get it out of his hands quick and be done with it. Show, I think it's time for our final danger zone of the football season. Let's hit it.
Welcome to the Danger Zone.
Danger Zone.
Danger's my middle name.
Danger Zone!
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
As were we, Baker Mayfield. Should be you in this game. Oh, well. Maybe next year.
Probably not.
Dang it. Oh, why can't I have Joe Burrow?
We'll have when Derek Carr is the quarterback of the Cincinnati or the Cleveland Browns after next season, we can get a Derek Carr quote about him feeling dangerous or something. We'll splice it in there.
I actually really like Derek Carr. I did like him coming out of the draft.
All right, there you
go. Derek Carr. But yes, whatever. I'll watch the game. Hope for somehow that there's a tie. No, that's impossible. My danger zone pick is this, show. I'm saying that both Kendall Blanton and Van Jefferson have more fantasy points than Odell Beckham Jr. So each player individually will both individually have more fantasy points than Odell Beckham Jr. in this game. OBJ, get out of here. You don't get yours. You don't get it. I'm putting that out there. No. Blanton, Jefferson, greater than OBJ. danger zone.
You know what? That is actually pretty dangerous. So I like that one. You know what? I said it at the beginning of the show. I wanted to give you my danger zone.
Oh,
that's a great danger zone pick by you. Oh, boy. My pick, Odell Beckham Jr. You knew I was going this way, Andy.
Oh.
Odell Beckham Jr., most receiving yards in this game. He will have more receiving yards than Cooper Kupp, more than his pal Van Jefferson, more than anyone else in the Rams, and certainly more than Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, or Trent Taylor, let's say.
Boy, so we're total opposite. So either OBJ has a terrible day and I win, or you do, or he has a great day and you win.
Well, here, I suppose it's possible that Blanton and Jefferson get a bunch of touchdowns, but not a lot of yards, and Beckham has a ton of yards, but no touchdowns. It's possible we both win. It's very slim, but it's possible.
It's very slim, yes, you're right. Oh, man. Well, folks, hey, you know what? We're here, Super Sunday. You missed any of the show? Get us on. You can find the show on Spotify, on the app, on Apple too, right, Show, you said?
Correct.
On Apple. Of course, sportsnet.ca and on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. Enjoy the game, folks. Super Sunday. We will see you next week on The Fantasy Show.